passage-wise and what we're looking at today, we're continuing on the journey through Acts that Mark's been going through. So we're on to Acts 12. I know most weeks we've been starting by reading the passage, so I'm going to just put the chapter up on the screen. We'll read through it together and then unpack a few thoughts. But yeah, looking through Acts 12, and it's a very, very interesting chapter. It's one of these ones, and if you haven't read it yet, that's okay, or just can't remember it, that's fine too. But I think it's one of these ones for me that you kind of read it, and it's just extreme thing after extreme thing that seems to happen. You know, you get some Bible passages that for me can seem quite settled in terms of chapters, and you get others that's just like pow, 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 and Acts 12 is a little bit like that. So I'll have a little read through and then have a chat about it, but this is it, so if you want to read along with me, that's great. But it was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword, and when he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter in the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals," and Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of prison, but he had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was just seeing a vision. They passed the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they'd walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left them. And then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know without a doubt that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhonda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, "Peter's at the door." "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, "It must be his angel." But Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said, and then he left for another place. In the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. Then Herod went from Judea to Caesarea and stayed there. He'd been quarreling with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and they now joined together and sought an audience with him. After securing the support of Blastus, a trusted personal servant of the king, they asked for peace because they depended on the king's country for their food supply. On the appointed day, Herod, wearing his royal robes, sat on his throne and delivered a public address to the people. They shouted, "This is the voice of a god, not a man." And immediately, because Herod did not give praise to God, an angel of the Lord struck him down, and he was eaten by worms and died. But the word of God continued to spread and flourish. And when Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission, they returned from Jerusalem, taking with them John, also called Mark. Weird, right? Yeah? I can phrase it a lot of different ways, man. I love Acts. It's one of my favorite books in the Bible. So when I got given a passage in Acts, I was like, yes. And then I read Acts 12 and thought, whoa. This has been a fun week. But I think the thing for me with this passage is just the craziness of it all. You know what I mean? It's like at the start, let's kill James. So that happens and James dies. Then Peter gets taken to prison and they're going to kill him. But Peter gets set free. And you're kind of sitting going, why not James? You know, I mean, like, why did Peter get set free and not James? But then after Peter's set free, and Herod's been doing all this stuff, apparently killing disciples, kind of okay, but not passing on praise to God when it's given to you, definitely not okay. And then Herod's taken out, and you're just kind of like, wait a minute, you know? And I think the thing for me is that as you go through it, everything's just so extreme. And I think it leads to that place of just, why? You know, of why, God, why? And anyone ever been there, personal faith life? You've just had weeks, months, years where you've been like, God, what on earth is going on? You know, and you're left kind of going, dude, if I wasn't chatting to you about it, I'd be struggling to believe in you right now. You know, you kind of hit those points where actually life gets so tough. And life gets so difficult, and big things happen that don't seem to make sense, and you're praying for one thing, and another thing happens, or you've been praying for something, and nothing happens, or you've just been hoping that life's going to go okay for 6 months, and it just never seems to happen. But whatever the deal is, we end up in that place where you're just like, God, why? What is going on? And I think the thing for me is that Acts 12 just left me in that place. I'm like, what did James do? You know, I mean, he's an apostle, disciple, great guy, did a lot of great stuff. And boom, he's dead, and that's kind of okay. And you're like, and John later dies in prison, and you're like, and that's allowed. But then Peter and Paul are both allowed to escape from prison and escape from martyrdom on a lot of occasions. Peter's allowed to live. Paul eventually gets martyred anyway. You're like, why then, not now? What's going on? And just in all that sense of timing, and why are some people deemed important enough to live and some not, is almost the question that comes, right? And it's very hard to think any other way about it. I think as a human, we read this kind of stuff, and it's like, why was that okay and that not? Because I think for me, we like the idea of one-size-fits-all black and white judgments, right? This is okay, that's not okay. This should happen, that should not happen, and there should be no gray, because if there was not any gray, I would not be confused right now. And I think because we want clarity, we want it to be obvious. And I think the thing for me is that as you go through the Bible and you start to encounter God's character, you kind of discover more and more and more that actually is not obvious. And a lot of gray areas are there. And things happen that seem to make sense, and other things happen that don't. And there's a question that comes with this. It's my mum's favorite question. It's funny that she's out the hall at the moment, but at the same time, it's my mum's favorite question. She's been asking me it for years, man. And the question that she always asks, and my dad will know what I'm saying before I even say it, is why do bad things happen to good people? It's the question all the time, right? Got so many friends, Christian friends, non-Christian friends, and otherwise, so that's the big thing that always comes back, right? If God was real, why do bad things happen to good people? So we're going to play a game to start off, because essentially, I mean, I'm the youth minister in this church, I run the youth stuff. We play games, it's what we do, right? We talk about Jesus too, but playing games is a big part of it. So participation works, because games where people don't join in are rubbish, okay? So we're going to work this way on the participation stakes. So if you're able, to your feet. Let's stand up. Everybody up. It's the commandments game. It needs a theme tune, but it doesn't have one. So we're playing the commandments game. Commandments game's dead simple, right? We're going to run through 3 of the 10 commandments. If you've broke it, you have to sit down. That's the deal. Hang on, not yet. Although I like the honesty. I like the honesty. That was fun. Right. So question number 1. If you've ever lied to anybody in your life or existence, sit down now. Okay. Got one person who's lying now, and everybody else just sat down. Okay, everybody back up. Right. Next one. Okay, you ready? We didn't do so good on the first one, right? So church, this is bad news, right? Bad news day. But we're getting there, so we're going to do better on this one, okay? If you've ever dishonored your mom or your dad in any way, shape, or form in your life, sit down now. My dad's in the hall, I can't lie about this. Okay, right. Everybody back up. Everybody back up. We're not doing well. We're not doing well. It turns out that Gorebridge Parish Church, we're not, yeah. I don't even need to take that any further. The evidence is there. Let's go for question number 3, okay? Question number 3. And I mean, I just ran out of 3 of the 10. There's more we've broken, but I'll do 3 because we don't want to be here all day. Last one. Have you ever stole anything in your life? Now, I'm talking a rubber, a pencil, a post-it note from work that didn't belong to you, a penny chew at the post office when you were 5, anything like that. Ever stole a thing in your life? Sit down now. Okay. Guys, everybody sit down. Everybody sit down. Thanks for playing. It's more fun when people play. So, do you know the thing? And there's a reason why I'm doing that, okay? There's a reason for this game. Let me explain the reason. I like tenuous links, and this is a fun tenuous link, so join me in it, okay? We were asking the question, why do bad things happen to good people? What we've just discovered is that we don't know good people. Okay? It's true. It's true. By biblical standard, God's standard of perfection, right? I'm not a good person, and neither are you. Congratulations, okay? So why do bad things happen to good people? And your life experience, they don't. You don't know any. Okay? Not saying that to beat you up this morning. Just by God's standards, it's true. Romans 3:23, right? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All have. So if you're pretending that you haven't sinned, then you're lying and doing that. So at the same time, you have just lied. So everybody has fallen short of the glory of God. Now, that doesn't mean we don't try to be good. Okay? We do try to be good. I try to be good. I try to honor God in my life all the time. Sometimes I'm successful. And sometimes I'm really not. But I do try. Ask my wife. She says I'm very trying. But at the same time, I think that when we play this commandment game, the deal for this game and why I'm running this game is to just make that point of we don't actually know a good person, but by our human standards, we tend to judge as if we do. Because the thing for me is that I know what my intentions are. And my intentions tend to be good. Very rarely do I wake up in the morning and think, I've had a really bad night's sleep. I'm going to be mean to the kids today. That's my plan. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and have that thought. I wake up in the morning and think, I'm going to try really hard to be nice today. Then Eden comes through to the room at 5:30 and goes, morning, Dad. And I'm like, no, it's not. Back to bed. Right? And actually, for me, it's like within 2 seconds of being awake, I'm like, ah, dude, I already did it, you know? And although my intentions are to be nice, the actions that I live by sometimes are great and sometimes are rubbish. Sometimes I live up to the intentions I want to live up to, and sometimes I don't. Now, the intentions are almost always good. I can think of very, very few times in my life where I'm actively trying to hurt somebody. Very few. They tend to happen on five-a-sides at Wednesday. But there's very few where I'm actively trying to hurt someone else. But I can think of quite a lot of occasions where I have hurt people. Now, the vast majority of the time, completely accidentally, or I didn't mean it, or it was an oversight, or something happened, I just didn't think. You know, you don't engage brain before you speak. Anything like that. But at the same time, I intend on being good. It just doesn't happen that way. And I think, this is a quote that I found that I absolutely love. Why do bad things happen to good people? That only happened once, and he volunteered. That's the quote. Bad things have only happened to a good person once, and it was Jesus. He's the only good person that's ever existed. Only good person that's ever existed, and he volunteered for the bad things to happen. Why? And here's the crux. So good things could happen to bad people. That's why Jesus did what he did. So if you ever find yourself asking the question of why do bad things happen to good people, you need to flip it. Because the real question is, why do good things happen to bad people? Why does the blessing of God find itself being experienced in the life of sinners? Why does God's blessing happen in the lives of people who daily fall short of his standard? Why does the blessing of God happen in the lives of people who actively turn away from him semi-regularly? Well, that happens because God's amazing and he loves you more than you could ever understand. That's why that happens. And the thing for me is it's all about perspective, right? It's all about perspective. If I'm really close to my suffering and I'm right in the middle of it, then who does my attitude go to? Goes to me, right? Poor wee me, my life's really hard at the moment, and everything's really difficult, and everything's really tough. Might well be true. I'm not diminishing the problems that we go through. Man, the last year for me and Fee has been tough. I'm not going to pretend it's been easy. But at the same time, if my perspective is only on me, then I start to think that my suffering, somehow God's absent because I'm suffering. Let me ask you a question. If 2 + 2 = 4, when life is easy, when life is hard, is it still 4? Okay, if God's good when life is easy, then when life is bad, is God still good? I don't see how the truth changes because our circumstances do. And I think as people, we tend to live that way. And we tend to think that our experience of God dictates how really is. If God's in my life right now, if he's encountering me on a daily basis, if I'm feeling his presence when I pray, if when I pray the answer is yes, if everything happens the way, you know, if the divine vending machine's working, basically. God, I want this in my life. Beep. It came out great, you know. Actually, rather than God, I want this in my life, beep, and it didn't happen. Suddenly, God's not real, right? Because it didn't happen. Or God's absent, or he doesn't love me as much as he did, or he doesn't care anymore, because actually it's really difficult, and I don't understand what happened. And actually, I've been through some suffering, and I wish I didn't, and because God didn't stop it, and he allowed it to happen, then suddenly it's really difficult. And the news that I think we lose in the West, because our lives are so comfortable. Our lives are so comfortable. I think what we lose is the idea that actually suffering for the gospel, biblically, is like a badge of honor. Suffering for the sake of Jesus' name is something that we're told in the Bible. Rejoice when that happens. Be glad that you're considered worthy to suffer for the name. What a difference in perspective. God does not exist so that you can have a middle or upper class comfortable life. That's not his purpose in your life. God's purpose in your life is to shape your character so that you become more and more and more and more like him. And so that he's glorified through your existence. Let me ask you a question. Does your character actively replicate God's? Because mine does in some places. And actually, I came to faith 15 years ago, and in the last 15 years, my character has got significantly more like God's than it was 15 years ago. I'm a lot more like Jesus now than I was 15 years ago. There's still plenty of parts of my character that aren't. There's still lots that need change, but I'm lots more like him now than I was. But let me ask a question. If somebody challenges you in part of your character that is un-Christ-like, if your opinion, your prejudices, the things that you've grown up with, things that you struggle with, that would make your opinion not like the one of Jesus exist, and God's going to want to deal with them because God wants to make you more like him, and you go through that pruning process. I've never spoken to a rose because that would be weird, but I can't imagine that a pruning process is comfortable for a rose. But actually, to make it grow, and to make it grow the way that it was intended to grow, sometimes we need to clip bits off that aren't good. And I think in all of our characters, there are parts of us that emulate Jesus, there are parts of us that don't. And for us to get to the place that Jesus wants us to be, because he wants us to be just like him, or as close as we can get while we're here, there's going to be parts of my character that need chipped off. There's going to be parts of yours that need chipped off. And actually, I have never known myself change anything that drastically in the person I am without having to go through suffering to get there. Never known it happen. A lot of the time it happens when we go through hard times and it comes to the light that actually this is an issue. It's the phrase, sin grows in the dark, right? Until it comes to the light, it's easy to maintain. When it comes to the light, it's ridiculously uncomfortable, but we might then change the behavior. And actually, God's role in your life is not to make it comfortable. It's not even to make it good by your own standards. It's to make you more like him so that he can be glorified and so that his love can be shown in this world. You're an ambassador of God. He's not there to serve you. You're there to serve him if you call yourself a Christian. And when you get to that stage, suffering becomes an opportunity for your life to point to the reason why in the middle of it all you still find hope. That's an incredible gift. That's an incredible gift, and that's why this matters. Got a picture of rope up on the screen. Now I'm going to go find my rope. Let me find it. Da-da-da. Here's my rope. There's a reason I have my rope. I'll explain in 2 seconds. But just while I'm doing this, there's a passage in, I think it's Mark 10:18, where Jesus is approached, and he's approached, and they say to him, "Good teacher," when they're approaching him. Do you know what Jesus' response is? He turns around and he says, "Why do you call me good? Only God is good." And at that point, his identity hasn't been revealed to the people around him. And I think for me, it's that kind of perspective. A lot of the time as Christians, we want to almost be seen as significant, as something to admire, as good people. And the thing for me is that Jesus is kind of saying, only God is good. That's the only one. So this note of good person, even Jesus held that view. And it's just fantastic when we get to that point. Because the great thing is it takes all the pressure off us. If life's not about me, I don't need to be good all the time. I don't need to perform. There's not that pressure there. Right, now that I have my rope and it's untangled, I want to show something. Let me chuck that end over there. Whee! Here you go. So this is a bit of rope. Imagine though, right, you need to work with me on this one. I said I like imagery, I like mucking about, I like having a bit of fun, okay? Imagine that this rope goes on forever, okay? At the moment it stops at the flower over there, but for the purpose of this illustration, it does not, okay? Rope goes on forever, it's eternal, it just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. And what the rope does is it represents your existence. You as a person are eternal, right? One day you're going to be in heaven with Jesus if you're a Christian. You're going to be there, and you're going to spend eternity there. So your life doesn't end at any point. The rope goes on forever. There is no end to your existence. There's a beginning, but there's no end. So there's the beginning here. And why I've got this bit of rope is to say that there's all this bit over here, right? But there's this little tiny red bit here, right? And what I want to do is challenge you guys with one thing this morning, right? This little red bit is your time on earth. Okay? You're an eternal being. This rope goes on forever. Your life never ends. It goes all the way over there, okay? But at the same time, this rope never ends. It goes on forever. You're an eternal being. Your life never stops. Your life on earth is that big. Is that big. And the thing for me is that when we have our opinion and our perspective on our life here all the time, then when we go through suffering, it feels like it's the only thing that matters. When we go through tough times, it feels like it's the only thing that matters. But the funny thing is that if you're trying to achieve something and going for a bigger goal, you'll suffer quite happily for the sake of that goal. Let me give you an example, right? In May, I ran the Edinburgh Marathon. It was one of these ones for me that I have a lot of old sporting injuries for the past. I used to be quite athletic, relatively athletic now, but nothing like what I used to be. And actually, when I was training for the marathon, I did quite a bit of running. And it hurt quite a lot. But you persist because there's an end goal. And on the day itself, I have an old injury in my hamstring that popped out on me partway through, and I had to stop and get seen to by medical guys, and then eventually got to the end. The last 10 miles were not fun. They just hurt. Okay? Signed up to do it next year, because the first 16 were fun, and I want to be in better nick next year. But the last 10 were not fun. They just hurt. But the thing is, when there's that finish line, do you know what that does to you? Makes you go, if you're competitive in any way, which I am, but it makes you go, do you know what? I know that when I get there, it stops. And I know that it's worth suffering so that I can get there, because I would rather get there, get over the line and make it with a bit of pain so that I have that sensation of making it to what I was aiming for than having to stop here and deal with the fact for the next year that I didn't make it. The competitive side of my brain goes, you can suffer for the next 10 miles so that you make it. And then you can be sore for a couple of weeks, but then you'll be fine and your pride will be okay. Rather than you can stop now and just feel rubbish for the next year because you didn't do it. Which is what would have happened if I didn't make it. And for me, I think when you have that goal, it becomes easier to push towards it. You hear Paul talk about that a lot. Where he says, you know, I'm pressing forward towards the goal. I'm not looking to the right or to the left, and there's the crowd of witnesses cheering me on, and one day I'm going to make it. And it's like our life, when our life finishes, it's almost like that's the finish line. Like when our life on earth finishes, that's where our real life really begins. We hit that point where we go into God's presence in eternity. We get to be with him. And it's almost like we hit that point where it's like, boom, I nailed it. I did the race. I made it. And there's a reason Paul uses that imagery. Because he knows that actually to compete during a race and to keep going, especially when it's long distance, because Paul even says it's not a sprint. To compete over a long distance takes effort. It's tough at times. It hurts. It's not that much fun. But when you get to the end of it, the sense of achievement is massive. And when you've got a goal you're going for, it's easy to keep going. Question for me is really, is your concern on this red bit here? Or is your concern on all this? Because for us as people, I think we tend to live as if this bit's the only bit that matters. And amongst everything else. What you do with your time, your money, your resource, how you love God, how much you're willing to suffer, how much you're willing to give up. How much you're willing to put into this red bit here so that this blue bit is the best it can possibly be. Rather than feeling so concerned and consumed with this little red bit that we never even think about all this. And the amazing bit for me is that when we stop thinking about our life in heaven as Christians, then when we suffer here on earth, it becomes about self-preservation, right? I do this. I might be the only one. But I do this. When I'm going through suffering, if my perspective isn't on God, if I've lost how important the rest of this stuff is in my thinking and my focus, then when I get to the point where suffering is happening here and it's really hard, I want to pull back from everything. I'll stop volunteering. I'll stop giving up time. I'll stop meeting up with these people. I'll stop doing that and this and that and the next thing, because that's all taking up my time. And right now, I just need time for me so I can recover and, you know, look after me. And yeah, that matters. And we need to balance our time, because there's no point going batty and burning out. There has to be a balance. But at the same time, if the perspective's on this blue bit, and I remember Steph being up the front last time he was playing in church and saying, if you're struggling, serve someone. Because actually, when we start to do the things that God's calling us to do, it brings our perspective back to this. And when it brings our perspective back there, we find joy again. We find our purpose. And it actually takes your mind off your suffering here. You know, it's absolutely massive. I'm going to do one more thing. Sorry, I'm all about cartoon imagery. Scales up in the screen, right? About good and bad in our life. Here's the thing. If we're looking at this perspective of why do bad things happen to good people, and all this idea about persisting in suffering and all the rest of it, why is it worth it? Almost becomes the question, right? Why is it worth it? And here's what I want to call you to. The good that God has already achieved in your life is better than any bad that will hit you between now and when you die, even if a tragedy hit you every day. It's extreme, but it's true. If you think that the rest of that rope is the perspective of eternity in heaven, and your little red bit is your life here on earth, and God has said, actually, you could never make this blue bit good by yourself, but the only good person that's ever existed had lots of bad things happen to him, and he volunteered in Jesus, so that actually when that red bit comes to an end, we get to spend the blue bit with him. What Jesus has already achieved for you is bigger, better, greater, and just the good is so far beyond any bad that can happen to you here on earth. It's so far beyond it that even if you feel like your life is awful and everything goes in that bad bucket from this day onwards, the scales are going to stay like that. They're not going to budge. Because the good God's already put into your life, what Jesus has already done for you on the cross when he won your freedom, when he took your sin, your shame, and he bought you a place back into relationship with God and eventually into glory with him, is better than any bad that will hit you from now till the day you die. It's better than any bad you can go through. It's better than any bad that could possibly happen to you. It's better than anything this earth can throw at you. And there's nothing that can touch it. Nothing can touch it. It's completely protected. It is between you and him. It's a heart issue, and there's nothing anybody can do to affect it either. And he's already bought it for you, protected it for you, and given it to you for free. Isn't that amazing? That by the cross, Jesus has gone here. All the good that you could ever hope for in eternity, this massive blue bit of the rope, the eternal part of your existence, that's bought for you. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be in heaven. It's going to be in relationship with God. It's going to be the best thing that you could ever imagine times a billion. You might need to suffer a bit for this little red bit to honor my name, but if you do that and you make it to that finish line, here's what's coming. The good that Jesus has offered you is so far beyond any bad you could experience. And I'm not talking about this from the perspective of not going through anything. I want to be honest with you guys about that. A lot of you know me and Fee's story because you've been about the church, but in the last 6 months, we've had both Fee's parents die of cancer. And actually, we found out that Alan was in remission. And then when we found out he was in remission, within 2 months he was dead. And then on the day of his funeral, we didn't even know that Fee's mom was ill. She missed her husband's funeral because she got taken into hospital because she passed out. And the day after his funeral, we found out she had stage 4 cancer. We didn't even know she was ill. She came to live with us, and within 6 weeks, she took a cardiac arrest in our house, and then she was dead. You know, it was just an incredible kind of 4-month period that we've just been through. And I can still stand here now with every bit of integrity and every bit of intention and say, guys, the truth is that that was crap. I'm not going to play it down. That was crap. We've cried a lot. It's been a rubbish few months. But the good of God within that has been phenomenal. We've seen God be faithful within it. And the good in my life still outweighs the bad by so much. The scales look like that. And that'll never change. Because actually, no matter what the world can throw at us, the goodness of God is still better. What God's achieved in our life is still greater, and that can't change. There's no tragedy that can happen in my life that changes how good God is, what he's done for me, and how much he loves me. There's nothing. Nothing can touch it. But it's about intention and living that way as a person. And the wonderful thing about the whole thing for me is that God has been faithful. When me and Fee came to faith, neither of our parents attended church, neither of our parents would have really called themselves Christians. One would have said they had an affiliation. That would have been about it. And the biggest prayer that we had together was, before our parents die, they have to be Christians. It's the biggest thing we prayed for. It wasn't give our parents a long life, give them a wonderful existence, anything like that. The biggest prayer was they just have to be Christians before they go, because we're not being separate from them in eternity. That's not happening. And we're like, God, you're in with us on this one, and you have to be faithful in this. Come on. And I'm not going to lie. 18 months ago, I would not have seen Alan or Carolyn coming to faith anytime soon. His mom or dad, they would never go to a church. They didn't really think much of it. And you know, 18 months later, they both passed as Christians. And I get to have that moment of going, is that the outcome that I wanted? Well, actually, yes, it is. I didn't want them to pass as soon as they did. Actually, Caroline got stolen much too early. Alan, I think, was okay with going. Caroline definitely wasn't. And actually, that sucked, man. That hurt a lot. But was God faithful? He absolutely was. Not in the way I wanted. Not in the way I wanted. But the biggest deal for me is I get to spend eternity with them. That is better than 10 more years here. Does it hurt that they went too early? Yes. Is it amazing that God was faithful enough to make sure they knew him before they went? Absolutely. And I'm incredibly thankful for that. And that's the wonderful thing, is that when our perspective is on the goodness of God in the midst of these circumstances, actually, I can look at what went on and think, isn't God amazing? That was crap. But isn't God amazing? And we're still at that place. And that's the wonderful thing, is in the midst of tragedy, we can still see how good God is. I want to finish with a C.S. Lewis quote and then a little thought afterwards. But I love this quote. Let me read it to you. It says this: hope means a continual looking forward to the eternal world. It doesn't mean that we're to leave the present world as it is. And if you read history, you'll find that the Christians who did most for the present world were just those who thought most of the next. It's since Christians have largely ceased to think about the other world that they've become so ineffective in this one. Aim at heaven and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you'll get neither. I think the thing for me as Christians is that when we put our perspective on the life to come and we're going, God, I'm going to live for you as if that finishing line is all that matters, then we're willing to sacrifice while we're here. We're willing to fight when we're here. We're willing to try and make a difference when we're here, because by the power of the Holy Spirit, this world can be changed. It's not a hopeless situation. And actually, the only time the world has ever been changed massively by guys like Mandela, Mother Teresa, and all sorts, Martin Luther King Jr., is when you get Christians who have deep convictions and who go, do you know what, even if it costs me my life here, I'm going to live as if the only one that matters is the next. And for us as Christians, I guess the call I want to give to you is so often, like that Acts 12 passage, we can just get hit by loads of things in life with so many questions going, so why did he die? And why did he not? And why did that person get healed? And why did that person not? And why, God, did you speak to that person? Why did you not speak to me when I prayed? And why, when I prayed for that, did it happen? And why, when I prayed for that, did it not? And we can end up with all these whys and whats and whos and hows and whatevers. Actually, do you know what that does? The only thing it really does is distract us from living for God now. Because we end up with so many questions that we refuse to take risks anymore because we're scared they won't happen. And fear stops us taking risks and pressing towards what God has for us. You read Acts, the early church. How many whys were there for the early church? Why is that person in prison? Why did that person get out? All the questions that came up today are from that church. And the guys there are going, there are loads of questions that we don't understand. There are loads of things that we don't know the answer to. But what we do know is that God's faithful, that he matters, that he saved me, and that I'm going to live like that's true. And here's the deal. Whatever questions you're sitting with, can I politely say, having gone through a lot of crap in the last 6 months, get over it and live for him because he's good, he's faithful, he loves you, and none of that's changed. What was true when your life was good is true when your life is bad. What is true about God when every circumstance is going your way is true when it isn't. And what's true about who he is in your life, how much he means to you and how much he loves you, is true when you feel like it isn't. And actually, maturity is choosing to live like it's still true even when it doesn't feel like it. That's what maturity is. Try and tell me that a marriage would work the second you asked your husband or wife to do something and you felt like they didn't listen and you just went, oh, fine, I'm done. It's ridiculous, right? But faith-wise, we live that way. I prayed and it didn't happen. I don't know. I've asked Fee to do stuff in the past and come home and it's not been done. Does that mean I just go, right, I'm done. I asked something, you didn't listen, you didn't honor what I said, and you didn't do what I wanted, that's it. That's laughable. But actually, I know that she loves me. And even if she doesn't do what I want her to do all the time, I know that she loves me and I choose to trust that because history and the effect she's had in my life tells me that she loves me. In the same way with God, even if he doesn't do anything that I want him to do over the next 6 years, I've seen enough in my life, I've experienced enough in my life, I know enough truth about who he is that it doesn't matter. Nothing changes. He's still good. He still loves me. He's still glorious, and I'm still going to spend eternity with him. And that's incredible. Live with that perspective. We have perspective on the life to come. Your life in this one will be so much better. I guarantee it.